We're studying the book of Proverbs these days, and last week we introduced it. Today we continue it, and as you can see, the title of the message today is The Path We Pick Matters. Well, I want to begin by asking you, have you ever wanted something badly enough that you were prepared to steal it? Well, my career as a thief began when I was about 4 or 5. It started with money. I had a brother who was faithfully collecting change for an African missionary or a missionary in Africa, and he had a piggy bank and he would drop coins in it, and I knew there were quarters in there, and I needed quarters to fund my frequent trips to the local corner store, and so I used to make periodic withdrawals, shall we say. A little later on, I noticed that one of the neighbor ladies had this cool little chrome gadget that you could just sort of flip open the top and then just spin the little wheel and it would create fire. That was my first exposure to the technology of cigarette lighters. Well, boys, fire, like think pyromaniac, I helped myself to that as well. A few years later, one of my friends showed me a gift that he had received. It was a pocket watch, gold-colored. Probably wasn't really gold, but to my little mind, it sure looked like gold. The little door on the front would flip open. It had a nice big wheel on top for adjusting the time. I had to have it, and so I took it. And about 10 years later, after I had become a Christian, I had to go to my friend in repentance and restitution and make an adjustment for my crime. So important that we watch what we want. We all have this capacity to want things, to want stuff. And sometimes we want things so badly, and we're willing to do, well, just about anything to get it. Do we know what we want? Do you monitor your wantings? It's so important to do that. There are obstacles to acquiring wisdom, and one of them has to do with ill-gotten gain. It has to do with what we could call easy money. We all want money. We all want stuff, but sometimes we imagine that we can sort of short-circuit God's laws of honest, hard work in getting the things that we want. And there are proverbs that speak to this, and we will look at a passage like that today. The dangers of ill-gotten gain. Well, just by way of background, the book of Proverbs, I don't know if you have read it or if you have read it lately. I would encourage you to do that, especially if you're part of our congregation. The book of Proverbs is dedicated to the theme of wisdom. What it is, where to find it, and how to acquire it. The word wisdom comes from a Hebrew word that is pronounced chokmah. It's got that guttural on the front end, so you got to a little bit. Chokmah. And the word actually means something like skill. It can be used of a technical skill. And in the book of Proverbs, it means skillful living, the ability to live life skillfully, doing life God's way. Also, the book of Proverbs begins with a series of talks. You may have thought that right from the get-go, Proverbs would have those short little snappy sayings, you know, like raise up a child in the way that he should go, and when he is old, he will, however that ends. Just those short little memorable statements, and yet that's not how the book of Proverbs begins. It begins with a series of talks. I think of them as TED Talks. Just these, in some cases, not really short talks, but they are passionate pitches. You know, we've all heard pitches, and some are more passionate than others. There are these passionate pitches from a parent to a child about, well, just about everything. Just about everything. About life, about pitfalls in life, about assurances, about life. And I would like to encourage you to take the time to read through these first 9 chapters and mull over them and let them, shall we say, marinate. There's a good summer image. Let them marinate your mind about what God says about easy money and other subjects. I think you'll find these talks both entertaining and instructive, and ultimately life-changing. If they mess with you, that is a good thing. Well, let me read to you talk number 1 today from Proverbs chapter 1. We'll begin at verse 8, and I'll read down to verse 19. Listen, my son, to your father's instruction, and do not forsake your mother's teaching. They are a garland to grace your head and a chain to adorn your neck. My son, if sinful men entice you, do not give in to them. If they say, come along with us, let's lie in wait for innocent blood. Let's ambush some harmless soul. Let's swallow them alive like the grave and whole like those who go down to the pit. We will get all sorts of valuable things and fill our houses with plunder. Cast lots with us and we'll all share the loot. My son, do not go along with them. Do not set foot on their paths, for their feet rush into evil. They are swift to shed blood. How useless to spread a net where every bird can see it. These men lie in wait for their own blood. They ambush only themselves. Such are the paths of all who go after ill-gotten gain. It takes away the life of those who get it. I just love that expression, ill-gotten gain. I'm seeing 5 moves in this passage, and I want to trace these for you. The first move I'm going to call elevating wisdom. Elevating wisdom, and in this case, it's parental wisdom. It's definitely PG. It's parental guidance, right? And that's how the talk begins, on a note of PG. Verse 8, what does one do with parental wisdom? Those of us who are grown up can probably remember many times when our parents sat down and spoke to us or tried to speak to us, and we were or were not willing to listen. The writer of the Proverbs tells us what we should do with parental wisdom. Pay attention. Listen. Write it down. Take notes. We would usually say something profound like, ah, Dad, we've already heard that before. The writer to the Proverbs says, pay attention. Then in verse 9, it gives them a reason why they should pay attention. And it has to do with what it'll do for us. What dear old mom and dad have to say will actually do something for us. Imagine that. And he has this interesting comparison, which might slip by us. He says that parental wisdom is like a garland to grace your head. Well, you say, what in the world is that? I didn't see too many people coming into our gathering this morning with a garland in their hair. Think wedding, perhaps, or a special event where a woman might have some sort of a decorative headpiece or maybe some flowers. And done correctly, they just so enhance her beauty. They're wonderful. So he says that's what parental wisdom is like, and it's also like a chain or a necklace to adorn your neck. I know that some necklaces can be really gaudy, and they don't really do much for a person's appearance, but boy, sometimes the right kind of chain, the right size of pearl, it just so accentuates the appearance of a person. And he says, just like that, parental wisdom will grace your life. It will enhance your life. It will make your life better. So save yourself some headaches and listen to what mom and dad have to say. One of the ways that we acquire wisdom, and that's really what the book of Proverbs is about. There's wisdom, and you need to acquire it. And you need to figure out, you need to understand how to acquire it. And so he coaches us in that kind of a quest. And one of the ways, of course, that we learn wisdom is by experience. And we all know the proverb, live and learn. You know, something goes awry. Something might go awry in the church. And we kind of look at each other sheepishly and like, what was that? Chalk that one up for experience. You know, there's something to be learned from the mistakes that we make. We'd be a fool not to learn from our mistakes. Yet the book of Proverbs tells us that there's an even better way to learn. Live and learn is good, but better than live and learn is learn and live. Wouldn't that be better? Instead of learning from your own mistakes, a wiser man learns from the mistakes of others. Why should you have to make all my mistakes? Why should you have to make all of the same mistakes that your parents did? Why not cash in on some of their pain because of poor choices? A wiser man learns from the mistakes and the insights of others. Well, let's suppose that you're driving down the road. It's rainy, it's dark, there are no overhead lights, and you see a sign like this. Now you look at it, and if you're paying attention at least, it should register slippery when wet, right? But maybe you're a young driver, and you don't know all these things, or you didn't pay attention to that class in driver training. And so you decide, you know what, I'm a pretty clever guy. I think I can figure this out. And so you barrel on at 80 kilometers when the sign beneath that sign said, reduce speed to 30 kilometers. You're going to sort this out. You're pretty clever. Or you could take the approach, somebody just put up a sign warning me of danger ahead. They must know some things about what's coming. I should pay attention to that. I think for the next little while I'm going to reduce my speed to 30 kilometers and save my vehicle and maybe even save my neck. How do you want to go through life? Live and learn or learn and live? The Proverbs would say, as much as you can, make it learn and live. So elevating parental wisdom, verse 8 and 9, verse 10 now, clarifying an aspect of parental wisdom. What exactly is the parental guidance that is offered? Well, the writer here in verse 10 says that there is a stance that needs to be adopted. Now, y'all know what I mean by stance, right? It's a way of sort of positioning yourself. It's a way of approaching life, we could say. There's a stance to be adopted when you encounter a person who has what I would call zero reverence for God. You ever meet anybody like that? Somebody who has zero reverence for God. Back in verse 7, we talked about this briefly last week, we learned about the precondition for acquiring wisdom. And there's an attitudinal adjustment that we all have to make. And this is how he described the stance. He said, the fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge. Or the awe of Yahweh. That's the personal name of God in the Bible, Yahweh. The awe of Yahweh. Okay, that's the attitude that we need to acquire wisdom. But every once in a while you meet somebody in whom there is no awe of Yahweh. And they try to draw you into their life, into their way of thinking. They offer you an invitation in not so many words. I have a way of life. I want you to come and join me in my way of life. I don't need God. I don't need a crutch. It just blows me away. I can't imagine anybody not having multiple crutches in life. We all need crutches. And for those of us who are believers, one of our shrewdest crutches is God and his higher wisdom. They try to draw you in. It's an invitation. What are you going to do with the invitation? You can either accept it or you can decline it. It's your choice. This last weekend, Diane and I received two wonderful invitations from friends. One we were able to accept, the other we were not able to accept. But that's how it is with invitations, right? You can accept them or you can decline them. Well, here's an invitation that we need definitely to decline. Another way of saying this is don't get tied up with the wrong people. I know this sounds so old-fashioned, doesn't it? Don't run with the wrong crowd. Sounds like something my parents would have said. I remember a number of years ago, my sister and brother-in-law they were raising two sons. And one of them was kind of at a crossroads in his life. And this was almost uncharacteristic of him. He started hanging out with people who had loads of bad attitude, and he would come home. And you know what he brought with him? All of this bad attitude just dripping off of him. And my sister and my brother-in-law were just fit to be tied. They didn't know how to handle this. They didn't know what to say. Well, to their credit, when they realized that there were people circling around their son who seemed to have no awe of Yahweh, they did the only thing they knew how to do. Parents do this sometimes in desperation. And for three payments of $29.99, I will tell you. I will tell you for free. What they did was they made a big fuss about it as parents. They just made a big fuss about it. And they wouldn't stop making a big fuss about it. And you know what? My nephew eventually came around. And today he is the smartest, nicest person just about that you would know. Just got an advanced degree. When he opens his mouth, if I'm smart, I will start taking notes. And I need to have a conversation with him about this time in his life because I knew about it. It was a season that he was going through. His parents made a fuss, and he did not stay with these people. So that's the author's way of clarifying an aspect of parental wisdom. And now he provides an illustration of a bad invitation, verses 11 to 14. To help the young person keep from getting sucked into a way of life where God isn't in charge, the parent imaginatively reviews this conversation. He says, here's a conversation. I want you to imagine a conversation like this. The irreverent people will now make their pitch. Now keep in mind, it's slippery and it's seductive. What was this pitch like? Well, verse 11, if they say, come along with us. Now the first thing we see about this invitation is it's fairly disarming, isn't it? I mean, it just sounds so nice. Hey, come on. We'd like you to be part of our group. It's really a gang. We want you to be part of our gang. We want to give you a place to belong. And you know, an invitation like that to some young people is just so attractive. It is just so needed because there isn't anybody who's saying stuff like that. They're not hearing it at home. They're not hearing it from their extended family. We could be your family, they say. And it's just so disarming. Keep reading. Verse 11, they minimize the danger of their invitation. They talk about lying in wait for innocent blood, ambushing some harmless soul. They minimize the danger. What they're proposing sounds so safe. The people that we want to take advantage of, the people that we're going to rob, they're not even expecting us. They are going to be like super easy pickings. This is one of those get-rich schemes. In verse 12, they exaggerate their power. They imagine that they have far more influence than they actually have. Let's swallow them alive, they say, like the grave. I know we don't use language like that, but you see language like that in the Bible. You see it in the Psalms, for example. And it all sounds so exciting. We are going to show people who's in charge. Boy, that's pretty heady stuff for a young person. They always feel like they're getting pushed down, and now they're being given an opportunity to show that they're in charge. They say, we'll be like lords over life and death. That's a pretty heady offer. Verse 13, they're offered a handsome reward. We'll get all sorts of valuable things. When I was in junior high, we had our version of gangs. They weren't nearly as lethal as these guys, but we had a few gangs in our school, and I knew some of them. For a while, they were offering, think of it as kind of a shopping service. If you want something and it was stealable, they would go to the department store and they would steal it. And then they would sell it to you at a, you know, basement bargain discount. I don't believe I was ever recruited by this group, which is probably just as well because I might have been silly enough to say yes and get involved, but they didn't. But they must have because it was more than one or two people. There were a group of people. So I imagine at some point there were some invitations that were extended. It's the ultimate get-rich scheme in verse 13. The guarantee is that of a handsome reward. Our bank accounts will grow. Hey, who's that not good news to? Our holdings will increase. We can get rich on the backs of others. Won't cost us anything. Then in verse 14, this imagined conversation, cast lots with us, we'll share the loot. Sounds so congenial, so welcoming. Hey, we could be one big happy family. They didn't mention it was a crime family, but we can be one big happy family. Share and share alike. One for all and all for one. It all sounded almost noble. Do you find sometimes that it takes discernment to process the messages that are coming our way? I'm pretty good. I think most of us are pretty good at filtering through commercials, like on TV. The commercial starts, and mind you, now you've got technology that you can record it and then just skip over the commercials. What a blessing that is. But, you know, the commercial starts, and your defenses are already up. Like, yeah, I'm not going to get sucked in by this. And then it gets on to the regular programming. But do we realize that the messaging isn't just through the commercials, it's also through the regular programming. And all sorts of things are coming our way. How often do we miss the messages? The message perhaps regarding the sacredness of life. When I was much younger, we would race home after church Sunday night so that we could watch that God-fearing family, the Cartwrights, in the television show Bonanza. That was a great show, wasn't it? Well, Diane and I recently watched some rerun episodes, and we were like blown away by all the violence. I mean, this family, everybody was always pulling their gun out. Somebody offended them just a little bit, and boom, you were gone or you were hurt. And wow, we thought this was, you know, fairly tame television viewing. Thankfully, Michael Landon saw the error of his way, and later in life he started producing some television shows that were really a lot more family-friendly. What about the sacredness of sex? I mean, you watch a television show, boy meets girl, and like 5 minutes later, they're sharing sexual intimacy. Or maybe at the end of their very first date, they're being intimate with one another. Do I need to remind you that that is not what we believe about sex? The sacredness of sex for a man and a woman in covenant relationship. Or the stewardship of our lives. And there are other messages that come through as well. It takes real discernment. We got to be on our toes. Sometimes you hear a message often enough and you actually begin to believe it. Politicians know this. You hear a politician's message one time and you think, that's garbage. And then the 10th time, well, maybe not so much. And then the 20th time, well, I mean, he must know what he's talking about. It takes real discernment to see through the ungodly messages coming our way. So that's move number 3. Move number 4, verses 15 to 18, we could call the application. We've heard the pitch for easy money. What do we do about it? Parental guidance has already been given. Don't accept the invitation. Verse 15, the answer is restated by the parent. My son, do not go along with them. In the Hebrew, it's really terse. It's don't go. Don't go. If they extend the invitation to you for ill-gotten gain, don't go. If somebody comes along with some half-baked, get-rich scheme, don't go. Boy, sometimes we can be such suckers for this. Do not go along with them. Do not set foot on their paths. Don't accept the invitation. Verses 16 to 18, he gives 3 reasons quickly. Verse 16, don't do it because it's evil. That used to carry a lot of freight with people. It's evil. Oh, stay away. But nowadays, we're not quite so attuned. We don't quite abhor evil the way that maybe the writers of Scripture did. Evil, whoa, get away. It's like, it's radioactive. You know, it's like battery acid. You don't want to touch that stuff. It's anti-God, it's anti-human, it's wrong on many levels. Verse 17, he says, it's just stupid. How useless to spread a net, he says, where every bird can see it. Not even a bird would fall for that. If you would fall for that, you are one less on the intelligence scale than a bird brain. It's stupid. Don't do it. Verse 18. And this is really quite curious. It'll boomerang. These men lie in wait for their own blood. They ambush only themselves. They honestly think they're arranging the funerals of others, but in reality, they're arranging their own funerals. Amazing. It's always alarming when people we know or people we love throw their hats in with those who are going to hell in a handbasket. Do they realize that by accepting their company, they may also be accepting their destiny? That's kind of a shocker. Verse 19, the last move, teaching. The Proverbs writer sums up now what he's been saying. It's about the folly of ill-gotten gain. There's a warning, and then there's wisdom. The warning is, don't try to grow your wealth at the expense of others. It'll ruin all who participate in it. Diane was listening to, I don't know if it was CBC the other day, and somebody had come up with a rich get-rich-quick scheme. They were some Americans. I'm not being anti-American here. It could have worked the other way. But some Americans came up to Canada, and they bought some medical supplies for people that have diabetes. Apparently, they're cheaper in Canada. I don't know why that would be. And then they went down to the States. They paid a couple of $100 for it in Canada and were able to inflate the price and sell it for about $3,000. And I imagine the people they sold it to weren't exactly the richest folks around. Don't grow wealth at the expense of others. There's such a thing as profit, and then there's gross profit. Now, I'm not in business, so I don't always maybe appreciate some of the finer points of this, but it must be very difficult if you're a businessman and you exist to make profit. You may have shareholders. They expect you to generate a profit. But what is the difference between profit, acceptable profit, and, you know, gross profit margins? That's probably pretty hard to determine. But a godly person will find a way of doing it that God will bless. So there's warning, and then secondly, there's wisdom. When enticed to do so, just get out of there. It's like Joseph in the book of Genesis when Mrs. Potiphar put the moves on him. Do you remember that? And he just got out of there. In fact, he got out of there so fast, he left his jacket in her hands, which she was able to use as evidence against the lad. But when enticed to do so, get out of there for your own good. So that is lesson one, the folly of ill-gotten gain. I don't know if you're a sucker for that, but maybe you have a son or a daughter, or maybe you've got a grandchild for whom this would be a real draw, and you could draw on this wisdom in conversation with them. Wisdom will enhance the lives of all who acquire it, so that even our financial dealings please the Lord, and we will dwell in the shadow of the Almighty. Father, we thank you for the wisdom of those who have gone on before us. We thank you for the way that you have revealed your wisdom through your servant Solomon and others. And we pray that you would find in us hearts that are thirsty for your truth and that are eager to put in the necessary legwork to understand it and implement it for the glory of God.